Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Yes, we're continuing our World Cup build-up. Delighted to say we have with us Stuart Barnes. You there, Stuart?
Yeah, I certainly am, yes.
Thanks so much for making time for us. I don't know if I've spoken to you before. I don't think I have. But I was just saying to the lads, I will forever associate you with that time in my life where I was watching Munster on their journey towards conquering Europe, and you and Miles Harrison were just the voices of that journey, brilliantly so. And I always got the real impression you two loved those trips to Limerick.
I love my trips to Limerick from a 15-year-old schoolboy playing for Welsh schools. It's one of the great rugby cities in Thomond Park in particular. Always in European days had that certain magic to it, and it was a privilege to be on that trip and be there when Munster won.
Well, it always came across. We're worried now. Can I give you Gordon Darcy here in the Irish Times today to give you a sense of how we're feeling about the World Cup?
You can. Give me a bit of Gordon.
Here we go. I'm worried. I think we all are. Twickenham on Saturday matters more than it should. All the Southern Hemisphere sides are up and running. Japan have become a serious opponent. Wales and England equally impressive in patches over the past two weekends. Even the French look dangerous again. Irish rugby supporters haven't seen anything to fill them with confidence for a very long time. We need a sign. And then later on he goes on to surmise, England are genuine contenders. We experienced their power last February. They're right up there with the Box and the All Blacks. Wales are in decent shape too. Michael Checa has turned Australia into a gang well capable of causing a tremor or two in Japan. Right now, he concludes, I feel Ireland are sitting below this list of contenders, just above the unpredictable French and Pumas. We haven't fired a shot. Twickenham on Saturday matters more than it should. There we go.
Well, I mean, I've got a reputation this side of the channel for being a Cassandra, but Gordon's taken my crown from me there. I understand what he's saying. I think it was quite a while ago I was starting to ruminate over whether Ireland peaked too early in 2018. I still don't know the answer to that, and a lot of that will depend on whether Joe Schmidt is an absolute genius who's been holding something back, or indeed the likes of Sexton and Murray are just with a combination of years and niggles just past their best, and I don't think a team can win a World Cup if they've got halfbacks past their best. But what I would say is you can look at England and Wales and say that they were impressive in patches, but there's a flip side to that coin, which is they were also deeply unimpressive in patches as well. And you look at Australia against New Zealand, and I'm always wary of Australia come a World Cup. They were brilliant in Perth. But in difficult conditions, they were extremely naive against New Zealand. And whilst Japan should be conducive to handling, it's very erratic weather. It can be very wet there, and teams like Australia don't show up there. So I think there are all sorts of correlations at the moment. And whilst I have worries about the shape Ireland are in, I wouldn't go anywhere near as far as Gordon.
There are two sides to peaking, I suppose. There is one, your own group and your own players, and then there is two, the worry that we seem to have that other teams have worked us out. If we start with ourselves, firstly, when you look at Sexton, do you see someone that you are a bit worried about? I mean, he's of an age now, and I appreciate we're talking about the reigning World Player of the Year, but how substantive are those worries when you look at his play?
They're substantial, and they're major, because he's Joe Schmidt's emissary on earth, if you like, on a rugby field. What Schmidt wants to happen mainly goes through Sexton. It's all well and good the forwards picking and driving and getting those meters and the magnificent ball management, but at some stage all those little incrementals have to amount to something. And if Sexton in particular can't start putting Ireland where they want to be, because Ireland aren't a team who are going to win a World Cup from scoring tries 70 metres out. Let's not kid ourselves. They have to keep ball, and they have to use that keep ball to gain territory. Possession equals territory. Territory equals pressure. Pressure equals points. You got yourself a chance. That's how they beat New Zealand. So if Johnny Sexton's not right, then Ireland are going to be in... Yeah, I think it's fair to say they're going to be in one hell of a hole, because he's such an outstanding player. They've got no one in that same breath at the moment. They have players of potential. Yeah. No one likes Sexton. And as I say, he's Schmidt's man. And whilst Best may have been captain for years, he is the intellectual axis of this team. So, yeah, you're right to be worried about Sexton. I don't think he had a great year, even though Ireland tried to wrap him up in cotton wool. But having said that, he's still in cotton wool in Portugal at the moment.
Yeah.
And with the state of medics at the moment, it would be no surprise if the wraps come off in Japan. Mm. And he's in good shape. And if that happens, then all bets are off, with Ireland being sixth ranked in the world.
Mm. Okay, well then let's cling to that hope that Sexton emerges, you know, ready to go and peaking for a World Cup. The other side of the peaking worry is that other teams have worked us out. Is that what you're seeing? Is that what you suspect has happened to a degree?
This goes back to my comment about Joe Schmidt and Irish fans having faith in him. I felt that Ireland were just a year older and a year more obvious last year. And I felt, to an extent, it was mirrored in the European Cup as well, where a year earlier, Leinster, to me, looked by a distance the best team. Mm. Last year, Saracens looked by a distance the best team. And I think there's a correlation there, because Best of Ireland is wrapped up in the Best of Leinster. And that's a concern, because there's no way that Leinster were trying to keep the lids on anything.
Yeah.
So I think it is a concern, because I think age is a factor. And I think you look at Ireland now and you're thinking, how do they change that game? How do they do more than play that sort of two-touch Sexton wraparound play? They've got to find other ways to get people like Gary Ringrose into the game. Henshaw's got to find more to his game. So there are lots of question marks. But what I would say is, I still believe that in the last 10 years or so, Joe Schmidt's been one of the most interesting, innovative coaches I've seen. Mm. And I remember that when he was at Leinster developed from Michael Checker's game into a team that played with great width. He went to Ireland, and I have been slightly surprised ever since that Ireland actually shrank down to a team that didn't take risks. So it would be a fool who would think they know exactly how Joe Schmidt will play a game. It wouldn't surprise me if Schmidt has a sort of a two-year plan coming into the World Cup.
Mm. Do you suspect Schmidt looked at Test rugby and looked at the players Ireland have and deduced that those risks, I can't get away with them at Test level?
That's a real possibility. But I think what we've seen from Irish players, the skills are very high.
Mm.
Maybe the dynamism that you see in different ways from New Zealand and England up front and South Africa is slightly lacking. But they have to find space. I don't believe that Ireland can play this possession territory game that I described a few minutes ago and win a World Cup. Because I think, for example, if they were to come up, if they were to top their group and New Zealand were to beat South Africa, mm-hmm. The latter of which I have my doubts, I think Ireland would have a very, very difficult time of it, more so with South Africa than New Zealand, because South Africa's physical power on the gain line. And guys like Ryan, who have been so good at making those metres without being sort of monstrously powerful in a Billy Vunipola way,
yeah.
I think suddenly they start playing against people like Etzebeth and they're hitting brick walls. And they're not losing the ball, but they're not going forward. And if they're not going forward, then Conor Murray's not front foot, Sexton's not advancing, they're going backwards, Springboks come at them. You know, in that sort of microcosm, you see how a game of rugby can be won comfortably by 5 points or lost comfortably by 5 points.
Yeah.
So for me, Ireland have to find more than just this safe possession territory game. They have to take some risks, and I think that's the challenge. We know Schmidt can come up with the moves. Now we've got to see whether he's got the courage at World Cup level to try something a little bit different.
Mm. And I guess one last point on Ireland then. It was very noticeable in our warm-up game against Italy that we pretty much, I'm going to use the word rarely, but I think not at all, had a box kick off 9. We almost went back to 10, and it was like a half Gary Owen, but a bit further on, and it was, you know, kind of contestable.
Yeah,
but
I remember watching the game sort of quite late at night, Saturday night, and just being amazed how many they were like golf shots, weren't they? Sort of half clubs.
Yeah.
That Carberry was landed on the 22, and Conway's very good in the air, but you want your aerial men taking the ball in the other 22, not your own 22. That's a very strange way to attack. But I sort of scribbled something in my notebook saying Ireland's kicking strategy. I think it was 3 exclamation marks. I think when you come to the World Cup, you'll see something very different. You've got in Conor Murray, if he's well, someone who is a master of the box kick. I think Ireland are just, they're looking to vary it. And whilst these games need winning, psychologically it's good for you. The main thing is just to get the whole game in shape and not to give too much away.
Okay, fair point. If you're just tuning in, we have Stuart Barnes with us. I'm very happy to say our rugby coverage is with thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. What about England then, Stuart? We're obviously looking ahead to Twickenham on Saturday. What kind of shape are they pitching up in? What have you made of things?
Scratching my head still. I thought they were encouraging against a pretty strong Welsh team at Twickenham. They had a lot of players missing. But I thought they were good on the gain line, and I thought that when things went against them, they slowed the game down, almost like a good basketball team does when they're winning, worked out what they needed to do, scrummed Wales into the ground, got the 3, 6, 9 points and won again. That's in the Six Nations and the Tour of South Africa, they were incapable of arresting opposition momentum. So I was quite impressed with that. We then went to Cardiff, and they brought the cavalry on with 25, half an hour to go, and they were within 4 points, yet Jones said he wanted an England team that could sort out the sticky situations. And with a lot of his big guns on, they didn't look like really eradicating the problems that had been set to them by the Welsh defence. They ended up catch-and-drive line-outs, and Wales, in a week, had gone from being hammered in that aspect of the game to dominating. So I think it was promising at Twickenham. I thought it was deeply disappointing in Cardiff. So right now, I mean, to use golf terminology, they're par one over.
Okay.
No more than that.
Because there is so much talent in that team. And
there is.
When they're on, God, they look amazing, unbeatable at times. We saw, you know, glimpses even in the Six Nations just gone. What are the kind of big selection issues for you, or the key personnel you want to see in, or that Jones, you suspect, is throwing around in his mind? That's starting 15,
well,
I'm talking about.
I think there's let's focus on two areas, back row and midfield. In the back row, England have always been done at the breakdown by the best teams for many years. Now, in Tom Curry and Sam Underhill, if he can ever stay fit, they've got two sevens who are magnificent. And you look at Australia, you know, come the World Cup, if it's fit, it'll be Pocock and Hooper.
Yeah.
You know that New Zealand now are looking at the Sam Kane, Ardie Surveyor route. So Eddie Jones is always worried about the balance of his back row because Billy Vunipola can't jump, and that's an issue. And he thinks if he goes those two sevens, he loses something in the line-out. But if you don't risk losing something in a line-out, is it not more is it more dangerous to lose the breakdown? Because there's hundreds of breakdowns, there's not that many line-outs. So I think that's a crucial decision. He's got Wilson, who's a dependable six. He's got Laws, who is a second row, who can do brilliant set-piece things there. And he's got two sevens, who I think are of high potential. I would like to see him go with the two sevens. I think he might go horses for courses when they're all fit. Then you look at the centre. I think that in an age of such communication and pressure in defence, a fly half can't be expected to just run the show purely on his own. He needs eyes and he needs ears. Now, England like to play Manu Tuilagi there. He's an amazing physical threat, but he's a very quiet man. He could be almost mute on a rugby field. He's not a reader of a game. I think it dumps your number 10 in a whole lot of trouble. I thought for a long time now, Slade didn't crack it as a 10, but he became a very accomplished 13. I would have liked to have seen England use him. He's been injured, so they can't, but use him at 12 and see how Tuilagi goes at 13. But that without jumping off the fence for once, I think England's big dilemma here is what do they do? I don't know the pure answer. I think if Slade stays 13, Tuilagi perhaps should be an impact player. But it's not obvious what England are doing there. I mean, there's even talk here that they'll be looking because of injuries to Ford and Farrell at 10 and 12 against Ireland.
Right.
Because I think that's another impact possibility, bringing Ford on. But he had a very poor game as well. So I think they've got an interesting and good set of options from which to make a decision in the back row. I think they've got a worrying lack of options in how they're going to come up with their midfield. And that would be crucial to England because, as you said, they've got a pack that carries brilliantly, that offloads superbly well. You know, this pack on its day is as good as any in the world. But if you can't provide that link between the pack and a high-class back three, then you can get cut off there. I also think that England are not strong at scrum half, where Ben Young wasn't having a great season before his injury, hasn't for a year or two. And then Willie Hines, they've got a very experienced old lag, but he's got very little experience at this level.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There are plenty of question marks about England for all the exclamation marks. Mm. About that pack of theirs.
Okay, interesting. I guess no team is perfect. I did, before we let you go, wanted to get your thoughts briefly on New Zealand and South Africa. And then it suddenly hits me that it feels like a glaring omission to overlook the number one side in the world all of a sudden. What are you expecting from Wales at this World Cup?
I still think that Wales might be the best of Europe. For the simple reason, I think England on their day can produce the best 80. Wales, at the moment, look like, of the three main European hopes, they look like the one who can be at 80% and find a way to win. I think they're extremely well coached. I think in bigger, it was almost symbolic of the fact that he's not a pretty player, but he knows how to win, and he's great under pressure.
Mm.
Ken Owens is a good leader. Alan Wynne-Jones, the Lions were touring South Africa tomorrow, would be an out-and-out captain. There wouldn't even be a discussion about it. He's developed into a great player and leader, and I think they have that leadership. I think they have a confidence, and I think Wales, I felt this for 2 years, even though they won a Grand Slam last year, I think Gatland's always been holding something back. So I think Wales are going to go very well.
Okay. So, look, New Zealand are just fascinating at the moment. Lost in Perth, obviously, and then rebounded to beat Australia 36 points to nil. You wrote a piece a couple of weeks ago on the Sunday Times.
I did.
Yeah. I mean, the kind of head notes of it, you know, you referenced various things. They're not a settled side in the way they were 2011, 2015. You said that's exemplified best in their midfield, like the days of Man Manu and Conrad Smith are well behind them. You mentioned the back row, you know, Kaino, McCaw, Reid. Obviously, they've lost two of them, and you said Reid may have started his descent too early, and confusion reigns at fly half, and one or two other things, throw them all together, mix it all up, and you said New Zealand will not win the World Cup.
Yeah, I must say, when my Sunday paper popped through the letterbox and I saw that line, I thought, gee, Stuart, what have you said? And a lot of people have spoken to me and talked about it after the 36-0 win at Eden Park. But the World Cup's not at Eden Park. Australia are a very poor wet weather team, and New Zealand were not put under pressure. The points I made came, I wanted to make them the week before Australia beat them, because I feel it's a long-term trend that's been going on 18 months. And lots of people in this day and age now, you know, it's not just sport, in anything. Something happens 1 minute, suddenly that's the answer to everything. It's not. You've got to look at long-term trends, and I think New Zealand have shown problems in that area. I don't think that Moanga Barrett is working as well as many people in New Zealand are convincing themselves it is. I don't believe Kieran Reid has that magic in the wide channels he used to have. And I don't believe, though they're trying to force Sonny Bill Williams in at inside centre, that he's the player he was either. And the reason I say New Zealand won't win, whilst they look brilliant against an Australian team, turned over a lot of ball, who didn't like the conditions, to win a World Cup, they might have to beat South Africa twice. And South Africa, if you watch their last three games with them, have caused mayhem in the midfield with the speed of their defence. They have a nation that has never been scared of New Zealand, even after the last few years of sort of 55-point hammerings. They're back now. And they've got a pack that are magnificent now. And if you look at all the World Cups, there's the odd exception. But normally, it's a team with a very strong defence that will win. I think back to 91, 95, 99, you know, 03, very few points in the final. South Africa had a brilliant defence in 11. New Zealand won a tight 11. It was only 15, really, where you had this wonderful New Zealand team who were a different class. Mm. So I'd go back to defences have a better track record of winning World Cups. And that says to me then, so where do you go with that? And I go to Wales and South Africa.
Right. Jacques Nienaber there at South Africa doing a good job.
Fantastic, yeah.
Yeah. The point which kind of caught me, I thought was a very interesting observation, and we're talking trends here. You said in the Sunday Times, New Zealand have reverted to a more typical approach to point scoring, away from the almost revolutionary running game of 16-18. Yeah. That was a fascinating point. Like, have they done that because they've lost the players to play that revolutionary game? Have they lost faith in it? What's your read on that?
Well, no, I think they were so full of confidence when they came out of the 34-17 final win. Even though McCaw had gone and Carter had gone, they were on top of the world. And when you're confident, you know, it's a great boost. And Barrett came in, and when Barrett came in, he changed the way the game was being played. He was a fly half without structure, but with a pace and an eye for a gap like we'd never seen. And he was their main man. And with him the main man, you're always going to have a team that are almost kaleidoscopic, you know? Everything's going to shift around. That's how Barrett is. Mm. And what fascinated me, and it's long interested me, and it reached its first peak, Himalayan peak, if you want, with the Lions tour, was when Barrett could not kick New Zealand to a series victory that they should have won because of their superior attacking talent.
Yeah.
And Hansen came back, and he had another nibble at this incredibly fast game where, you know, they stopped their box kicking, they never kicked for goal, they were just going to burn people off their feet and then kill them with their ability. But we had the Lions tour, and then South Africa set the alarm bells ringing last year, because if there's one team they worry about, it's Springboks. And I think South Africa's defence, they got to Barrett, and suddenly Hansen's thinking, if they get to Bowden and we're not certain of a goal kicker, we're called out.
Yeah.
Now, I think Moanga is a good player, but he ain't Bowden Barrett. And New Zealand sort of have Barrett at fullback because he's such a genius. But they want to play this attacking game, but they want also the traditions of an old test match 3-6-9 kicking the penalty type game. And like I say, I am a massive fan of New Zealand rugby. There's such clarity in what they do.
Mm.
My whole point about the clarity, this goes back to the sort of, they've never had a fly half like Barrett, but they probably haven't had a goal kicker as bad as him under pressure for 20 years. And I think they've got, you know, in a weird way, their most wonderful talent is the bloke that's causing them the greatest selection headaches.
Mm. You've set it up fascinatingly. Are you going to be out in Japan yourself?
I won't be in this hemisphere, let's put it that way.
Okay. Listen, great stuff. Great to have you on. And by the way, we have your book on the desk outside, Sketches from Memory, your memoir. We must chat to you about that some cold evening down the line.
That would be lovely.
Great. Okay. Listen, Stuart Barnes, thanks so much.
It's my pleasure.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.